Following a landslide election 3 years ago, Ronald Reagan moved into the White House and with unprecedented urgency began to steer the nation along a new course. As we enter election year 1984, people are asking important questions about the directions the president has taken, not only about national social and economic policies, but also about the day-to-day management in this administration. Welcome to Frankly Speaking. I'm Penny Goodman, and with me is George Mason University Professor of Public Affairs, Chester Newland. Dr. Newland has just completed a study that examines the impact of policy development in the Reagan White House. He served as director of the Johnson Library at the University of Texas, and for over 30 years has been studying federal and local government management trends. We're going to talk about internal management in the Reagan administration, the agenda, the people, and the apparatus. Of those three things, Dr. Newland, let's start with the first. What is the Reagan agenda?
Essentially, the agenda underlying the administration is one of promoting the concept of self-governance and of limited government. A careful distinction is made by the Reagan leadership between governance and government, indicating that governance should be by people and largely governance of self, that government should operate within a fairly limited sphere of activity.
What has been the effect of that?
Yeah, the agenda is translated in several areas. The first year, of course, was focused primarily around what was called the Economic Recovery Program, and that was essentially around a major tax cut, reducing the capacity of the government to spend. The effort was initially to reduce the income level to about 18.5% of GNP from around a 21-22% level. The hope was also to reduce spending during a time that some economic recovery might have occurred, and the reduction in spending would have hopefully been reduced likewise to an 18-19% level. The recovery, of course, was not that strong. Consequently, major deficits have occurred. Other major parts of the agenda in terms of practice consisted of deregulation, particularly deregulation of private enterprise and of individuals. There were also efforts related to both of those then to turn around the aspirations and the hopes and the confidence of the nation toward more positive economic activity.
Well, in the very beginning when Reagan took office, of course, he had to determine what policy was needed to implement that agenda, and he made unprecedented use of citizen task forces. Could you tell us a little bit about those?
The study I did is of policy management in the Reagan administration, and one needs to compare that with prior administrations. During the transition period, the leadership, largely under the direction of Ed Meese, developed a number of task groups that would step into government, in some cases shortly after the election, and start planning policy initiatives that would go into effect in January. Ultimately, the task forces numbered nearly 100. They operated within virtually every key part of the government. By contrast, earlier administrations had used some policy task forces, but nothing that extensive, nothing that deep into operating levels, and certainly nothing that early. The 100 task forces did their work within the agencies, transmitted to the transition group and then later to the executive office building reports, and those were used as guidance in most of the departments and certainly within the Office of Policy Development in the White House as the administration did its initial work.
Basically, what was the difference between the use of task forces, say, in the Johnson administration versus Reagan's?
Oh, if you wanted to look at it as a whole, you'd have to go way back to the Kennedy period. President Kennedy utilized several task forces during the transition. By the time they took office, they had around 18 operating, largely dealing with foreign affairs and another cluster in domestic. Those, however, were in broad policy terms. Prior to that time, we had generally relied on the agencies per se, funneling material through the old Bureau of the Budget. to provide much of the policy guidance to the administration. The real change then occurred under Kennedy. Under Lyndon Johnson, we had several task forces operating throughout the administration, most of them off the record. But again, they were operating at a presidential level as advice to the White House. The big difference here is, one, the large number, two, the operation at agency level, fairly deep in the organizations, looking at the specifics of policy and of management of the departments and the non-departmental agencies.
Now, you mentioned it just briefly, but I wondered if you could give us a little bit of the history of how policy is set by either Congress or the agencies or the White House.
Yeah, again, we can't do much of that in a very short time, but if one were to go back prior to the Great Reform era of the Progressive period, which culminated in the 1921 Budget and Accounting Act, generally, the concept was that Congress initiated policy and the relationships between the bureaus within the departments and Congress was quite direct on policy formulation and on budget impacts. In 1921, we developed an executive budget for the first time in the Bureau of the Budget, which at that time was within Treasury, and the President was given responsibility to report on fiscal impacts of legislative proposals from the bureaus and the departments. The President at that time, however, was not given leadership authority over the legislative initiatives. In 1939, when we moved the Bureau of the Budget to the old Bureau, to the Executive Office of the President, the President assumed larger responsibility for policy leadership. The coordination of the policy, though, continued within the Bureau and largely in the hands of career personnel who were expert and professional, continuing with government over a large number of years. The specifics of policy still initiated within the bureaus where the expertise was and was funneled up to the President for coordination and for legislation that would go forward.
Let's look a little bit at the structure being used now under the Reagan administration. There are a number of distinct parts. Two of those are the Office for Policy Evaluation and the Office of Policy Development. What is the difference between those two?
Historically, the big organization is what we now call OPD, the Office of Policy Development. That was created officially under the Nixon administration when we set up OMB as a reorganization of the old Bureau of the Budget, and we also set up an office called the Domestic Policy Office. The period between Lyndon Johnson and the Nixon administration was one in which we saw increased exercise of policy leadership within the White House. Under Lyndon Johnson, particularly with Joe Califano responsible for development of domestic policy and its coordination in Great Society programs. Under Nixon, we continued for about 2.5 years with a variety of approaches, but they did finally come together in the Domestic Council. The Domestic Council, by law, was to be staffed, again, with considerable continuity and career expertise, but from the beginning, it was political in its staffing and in its operations. Under Nixon, much criticism of the Domestic Council resulted in that it was thought that the various councils that operated within it tended to be devices for separating the operating departments from the President more than devices for integrating them, and in fact they were. The Ford administration corrected that deficiency, particularly in what was known as the Economic Policy Board. The Economic Policy Board, in many ways, was the forerunner in experience of what we now see as a key element of the Office of Policy Development. During the administration of President Carter, the domestic policy apparatus functioned also with some councils, but they were less integrated, and particularly after the first 2 years, the economic policy apparatus of the Carter administration became much more case-oriented, much more here and now in terms of current political initiatives and priorities. When the Reagan administration came in then, knowing the experience of Nixon, Ford, and Carter, it sought some apparatus that could provide coordination between the agencies and the White House without a separation between them, something that would lead to presidential involvement and leadership, but at the same time draw on the knowledge and the resources within operating levels of government. And that's what they set out to achieve, and I'd say by and large they have achieved it.
It seems in your article that you mentioned that the Office of Policy Evaluation was primarily long range.
Yes, and the Office of Policy Evaluation, or rather Office of Planning and Evaluation, is a relatively new little organization, strictly a creature of the Reagan group. Mm. It came into being on January 20th when they first came into office, a tiny little operation of five people with their positions allocated from the Office of Policy Development. It was under the leadership of a brilliant young man, Rich Beale, and looked at longer-term strategic behavior of the president, trying to provide informed guidance as to what his schedule would be, what are the initiatives that should be followed, and most importantly, is the administration keeping on the agenda.
Reagan has established a hierarchy of supporters that goes deep into the bureaucracy, as you have mentioned, and it raises the classic question about whether policy machinery should be based on partisan politics or institutional professional staff. Could you comment on that issue?
Clearly, the president, whoever may be in the office, will require considerable reliance on political loyalty, party initiative for policy, and a mixture of expertise and long-term continuity of government. And this administration does some of that. However, over the years, we have seen the domestic council and then later the Office of Policy Development operate largely through political appointees rather than career personnel. This administration, more than any other, has politicized the upper levels of the government deeply within the bureaus and the departments, as well as in the executive office. What that means is that when we do have a transition, whether at the end of 84 or 4 years thereafter, we shall see a larger turnover of personnel in the executive branch of government than at any time in history.
Assuming that Reagan runs and is elected to another term, do you see any major changes he might make in his organization?
I should think that if one were looking at the experience of domestic policy development in this administration, where it's probably been more sophisticated than any other, that we might want to revise the cabinet councils, probably have one on economic affairs. The present cabinet council on economic affairs accounts for 50% of the work of all of the apparatus put together. Probably another one on the rest of domestic policy. Probably a continuation of the highly successful Cabinet Council on Management and Administration. And then some operation, of course, dealing with foreign and international affairs as we have. The one other area that we would need in domestic policy, according to most authorities, would be something in long term. I suspect that the Executive Office of the President is inconsistent with that. The Office of Planning and Evaluation is the closest we have ever come to it. But in the White House, the short-term invariably drives out the long-term. Short-term political advantage and pressures prevent presidents and their administrations from looking at the long-term interests either of the nation or of their own administrations.
I'm Penny Goodman, and my guest today has been Dr. Chester Newland. Frankly Speaking is a public affairs program of George Mason University. If you have questions about our program or our guest, please call 323-2138. Thank you for listening.